the glass. The left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get it going. Happy Thursday. It is Thursday, February 27th. It's the penultimate day of February. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg from our Groundworks downtown studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. If you're listening live, hey, text line's open for you at 960-960. Lots to talk about on the program today. Nothing more important than a hello to Aaron Vickers from NHL.com, though. Hello, Vicks.
Did you use penultimate just for me? Because you know I'm such a fan, and I perk up every time I hear you say it.
I knew you like it, and yeah. I know the old boss
hates it.
He hated it. Kelly Kirsch is like, don't use stupid words. I don't care if
it's a great word. I would vehemently disagree.
He'd be like, don't use vehemently. also, don't call snow the white stuff, and don't call a period a stanza.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh. He really hated broadcastery stuff. Like, because really, who actually uses penultimate other than usually English broadcasters?
But I do love stanza.
The penultimate day of February here as we welcome you to BBC News One. You're like, okay, yeah, fair enough. Very British sounding.
That sounds classy.
Do you ever use stanza in like regular conversation?
No. In regular conversation, no. I don't use it in copy either, but I do appreciate a good, like, let's not say the word period 19 times. Let's mix it up.
I get it. But at the same time, his thought was, hey, don't use synonyms just to sound like you're a broadcaster. Anyway, I digress. We are about ready to kick off the one-week countdown to the trade deadline. So it's February 27th right now. Friday's February 28th, and that is the one-week mark until the 2025 trade deadline. And funny enough, we're going to be talking about the trade deadline between now and when it hits at 1 o'clock Calgary time on March 7th. We've talked a lot about the Flames going out, potentially adding another center. And you and I kind of scratched the surface a little bit of that center ice conversation earlier this week and threw out some different names that could possibly fit the fourth line center role for this team, which I think is the area that you could see them really going and attacking. And the other thing that has been talked about by some and that we've mentioned a few times is the idea of another left shot defenseman, maybe somebody to help solidify the pairing with Mackenzie Weegar, or maybe just some more left side depth, because right now on the NHL roster, they are pretty overloaded with right side guys, more so than a lot of other teams are anyway. With Tyson Berry in the American League now, it's a little less slanted, but before it was quite slanted. So I guess there's two types of trades here that we can get into. I've come up with some names. There's the one category, which is that low-cost tinkering move that would be a depth defenseman addition, that type of thing. And then the other is the bigger move that brings in a younger defenseman that isn't a rental, that isn't going to be here for a short period of time, that is going to be a longer-term part of the solution. So you've got the younger long-term defenseman, or you've got the lower-impact veteran lower cost potential rental. Those are kind of the two categories. I don't know if there's really much of a middle ground in terms of what the Flames would be going after.
No, and to be perfectly honest, I would be okay with a move that is either of those. I don't have a particular preference. I mean, ideally, you would always want to be acquiring somebody with term, but at the same time, if you're bringing in a player that can slide next to Mackenzie Weegar on an expiring contract, it opens the door to a lot more options if you're Craig Conroy, because you're not worried about fitting that particular age range. You're not worried about term. You're not worried about the dollar figure. You have ample amount of cap space to basically do anything. So if I were playing GM of the Flames and I'm in constant contact with 31 other teams, I'm definitely filling my Excel spreadsheet with the two different categories and running down the list and getting a ballpark on what each costs. I'm not a big fan of spending significant assets for an unrestricted free agent.
No, neither am I.
But at the same time, I wonder what you would have to spend to get somebody that would qualify as a second pairing defenseman. That would be an upgrade over what you already currently have. But it's a fun conversation. There's certainly some debate.
In my eyes anyway, the guy who could fit in as a second pair defenseman would have to be the younger, longer term fit. Otherwise, you're probably looking at more of a depth add, like a six or a seven or somebody like that.
Okay.
That probably would have a left shot.
And very much preferably a left shot, because a lot of this mission in finding a partner for Mackenzie Weegar is to keep him on the right side permanently. Not that he can't play the left side. We've seen him do it this year.
He does it well.
But I do think the preference is to have him on his natural side. If we're talking about somebody that's going to be a more longer-term fit there, I'm willing to expend significant assets. And we'll get into the names in a moment. But if you can find your Farabee Frost deal, but in a left-shot defenseman in that age range,
yep,
you absolutely burn up the phone lines from my perspective to see what's out there, what's available. And at the end of the day, how much it's actually going to cost you.
Do you you want to go back and forth and throw some names out there? How many names did you come up with?
I've got 4.5. I don't like my fifth so much, but
so it's a half?
Well, I mean, it's not one I'm going to argue for. It's a name that I'd be curious to get your feedback. Should I start there? Did I tease it? Should I save it for the end? It's not consequential, so if we run out of the clock,
let's save it.
I'm okay with not getting there.
Let's start with the biggest name, at least on my board.
Yeah, and it is on mine too. Go ahead.
Most trade boards right there, you take a look at the major websites, most trade boards have Bowen Byram of the Buffalo Sabres potentially up for grabs. And Western Canadian guy, Cranbrook guy, former Western Hockey Leaguer, who is a restricted free agent at the end of this year, but is yet to sign a deal with Buffalo, despite everything seeming like it's been a really good fit with the Sabres, other than the team success hasn't been over the top. 23-year-old left shot defenseman. I mean, it's hard for me to sit here and say, no, Bowen Byram, what would you be doing? Like, this is a guy, I never thought Colorado would move him. I really didn't. But I mean, I got to stop saying that I don't think Colorado will move guys. That's two stretch drives in a row where they have made significant trades for important players while trying to win a Stanley Cup. They traded Byram straight up for Mittelstadt last year. This year they traded Rantanen, and they're laughing right now at how the Rantanen deal has worked out for them. But now Byram's in Buffalo, and I don't know if there's a long-term fit there or not, but if you could make a deal with the Sabres to bring in a guy like Bowen Byram, I would be all for it. I just don't know how realistic it is between now and the trade deadline.
No, this one feels more like it would have to be an off-season deal. And I say that just because the assets that'll be required. Like, I can't imagine the Buffalo Sabres are interested in a first-round pick and a prospect for Bowen Byram. Maybe that changes, but everything that we've heard leads us to believe that they are, in making any moves, whether it's Cousins, whether it's Byram, whether it's player X, Y, or Z, they want help now. They're miserable in Buffalo. They are sick and tired of losing and acquiring assets that might, because first round pick is still a shot in the dark. You don't know what you're getting. Even with a prospect, you're getting a player that typically doesn't have any NHL experience. So in making a significant move for one of your core players, the Buffalo Sabres need immediate help back, because again, those future assets may or may not even help you. Certainly not helping you in the short term. But as we talk from a Calgary Flames perspective, Bowen Byram checks every single one of the boxes you'd be looking for in making a splash and making a hockey trade in trying to bring in somebody that could solidify your top four defense.
Like, I think you would have to give up a first round pick. I think you'd have to give up a forward and probably one of your young D prospects. And Perek would be the one that is off limits.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you'd probably be talking about one of Coronado or Hanzek, one of Muse or Brustevich or somebody in that.
Morant.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So yeah, if Parekh's off the table, as he should be, so you'd probably be talking about one of Hanžek and Coronado. You'd be talking about and probably they'd be looking for Coronado, NHLer. Let's just say, for sake of this conversation, it is Coronado. So say it's Coronado, Muse, and a first for Bowen Byram. Do you do that? Because I think Buffalo would be okay with moving away from an NHL defenseman with Dahlin, with Joki Haru, with Power. Like I think
Samuelson.
I think they feel like they are, you know, in a decent enough spot on the blue line that for them to add another forward and a younger defenseman plus get that first, maybe they could. And honestly, I have no idea if that would even make it happen for Buffalo. But what if you're the Flames, if that was the asking price or something in the ballpark?
If I could get that deal to be Hanžek and not Coronado, which I don't think you could, I would do it. I'm a little leery on sacrificing Coronado in a deal for Bowen Byram. Byram's the better player right now. No doubt about it. No question. That's why you're adding a prospect. That's why you're adding a pick.
Yep.
But there's just something about Matt Coronado, and this can be a discussion for another day. There's something that I wouldn't trust myself to move or part with Coronado right now because I don't know what he is in 3 years. Can he be that 30-goal guy? Would you, if the deal was one for one and we fast forward two or three seasons and Matt Coronado is a 30-goal scorer and you can flip him for Bowen Byram, what side would you want to be on there? I'm less concerned about the pick and I'm less concerned about the prospect. Okay. My sticking point is, man, I do think Coronado can be a 30-goal scorer. I don't think it's a stretch to say that. We know the coaching staff believes that. We know Ryan Huska believes that. We have no reason not to think that he can't be north of 25.
Yeah.
We saw on Tuesday what that shot can do. So the question is, one, he's still got to get there. Potential isn't fulfilled until it's fulfilled. Mm-hmm. What a great line. What a great quote. Thanks, Captain Obvious. But there's something that would make me so hesitant to move Matt Coronado for a defenseman. If we were talking about a Calgary Flames team that was one top four, top three, top pairing defenseman away from a Western Conference final, that's a sacrifice I would make then. But I just think that there's so much more runway left with Coronado. This is less a Bowen Byram conversation that I'm having right now and more a Matt Coronado. Knowing that there's still so much runway there, knowing that you've got Parekh that may make an impact, knowing that you've got four or five defensemen, not all of them are going to hit, but all you need is one out of those five defensemen to hit outside of Parekh, and suddenly in two or three years, you're looking really good. I don't know. I like Hanžek, yes. Coronado, I'm very leery on.
And I'm not trying. Believe me, this is not Pat trying to run Coronado
at all.
I'm as big a fan. I'm just saying, like, if you were to get a guy like Bowen Byram, you'd have to give up something to get. And Byram at this stage would be the key asset in the trade. I'm a big Coronado fan, and I just think about, like, Byram, Parekh, Uyghur, Ball, maybe Anderson going forward. There's a lot to like there. Anyway, who's up next on your list? And I've added a few since we talked about this, but I'll add those kind of in one big ball at the end.
So I had Byram at the top of my list. Not that my list is numbered or anything, but he was just the automatic first name you put there. And I don't fill out any additional details in my prep because Bowen Byram sort of speaks to himself. But if we want to stay with Buffalo, I wonder what Matias Samuelson would cost because you want it now. If Byram is moved, Samuelson comes off the table. I'm certain of it from a depth perspective. But if Buffalo can't find a match and an acceptable return, I wonder if they do look at a guy like Martin Samuelson, who's cost controlled for a really long time, a left shot. He has kind of having a down year, but he's shown he can play north of 20 minutes a night. He kind of fits that age range you're looking for. To me, he comes at a discount as well. Like when you're talking about the price of Byram versus the price of Matias Samuelson, there's a difference there. But I wonder if he's not a guy that you can identify again. 6'4", 225 pounds, left shot, turns 25 in March. He checks a lot of these boxes in terms of what you're trying to build. And I think that you can get him at a little bit of a discount even over where he was last year or the year before.
Yeah.
So I wonder, that's a name that I would, his cap hits 4.2. Not that, again, at some point the Flames will have to be cognizant of how much money they're spending. They're not really there right now, but you do have to 2, 3, 4 years down the road and the cap will go up. Yes, that's fine. But you also still need to be mindful of certain situations. But Samuelson is a guy to me that I wonder about if he got a change of scenery. Is there a market inefficiency? If Bowen Byram doesn't move, is Samuelson the next guy that makes sense for the Buffalo Sabres to try to not even offload, but try to help bolster your forward core? Because, I the move here for the Sabres is move a defenseman, get help up front. I wonder if there's something in a Samuelson-type deal that can be had that doesn't make me go, I'm not giving up Cornot. Because, again, I don't think you have to give up Coronado to get Samuelson.
I wouldn't either. And honestly, I don't even know if I would give up Coronado to bring in Byram at this stage. Like, I'm kind of where you are. Yeah. I only throw it out there because that might be a guy the Sabres would be looking for if they're going to be moving a guy like
Byram. For a guy like that.
Or maybe, and I mean, who knows? Maybe they're looking for a guy. Maybe they'd be more interested in a guy with a little bit more NHL tenure. Like, maybe they'd want a Morgan Frost, or maybe they'd want a Nazem Kadri. I don't know. But I don't know if I would go down the Coronado road either. I know the text line is not a big fan of it. Like, yeah. I'm a big fan of Coronado.
And again, this isn't us trying to put Coronado on the trade market.
No, I'm just saying.
We're both sitting here going, he's not a guy I think I would move in that
sense. I do like the Pettersson idea out of Buffalo. Let me, I've got some veterans, and there's a few different ways you go about that. Here's a few of the rental names that you could hit on from veterans. You've got Alec Martinez in Chicago, Matt Grzelcyk in Pittsburgh. These guys are both veterans. I don't think you'd be paying a whole lot to bring them in. And so I think you could potentially look at that type of move. And then there's a few other names that are more of the... And they don't all have, they're not all in expiring contracts, but could you, and I don't know intimately what some of these teams are thinking, but could you go and help a team with a potential cap crunch, not even right now, but going into next season? Like, could you get a Mike Matheson in Montreal for relatively cheap because you're able to take on his entire almost $5 million cap hit he signed for this year and next year? Could you get a Matheson? Could you get a Ben Chiarot in Detroit? Again, a guy who is signed this year and next year, and you're doing the Red Wings maybe a favor by taking 4.75 off of their cap for this year and next year. Now, the Red Wings have lots of cap room going forward, but that type of deal where maybe you even get an asset back or something like that, where you're helping a team, or a Jamie Oleksiak at 4.6 in Seattle. Is he a guy that you wouldn't have to pay a whole lot for because you don't need to worry about retaining salary, or the other team doesn't need to retain salary? So a guy who is at 4.6 for next year, like, now all of a sudden you're helping Seattle, and maybe they can go they got a little bit more cap flexibility. Again, I'm not suggesting that all of these would happen and the teams are wanting that type of cap relief, but could you get somebody on the cheap for this year and next year because you're able to deal with the contract?
I don't hate that idea whatsoever, because you're basically, in theory, either getting a low-cost asset or an additional asset for taking on this salary, but it is also a player that could, in theory, again, we're talking sort of generally, not on specific players exactly, but if you're able to absorb a contract for a team, help them out of a jam, whether you get an additional asset or not, but if that player can slide into your top four and buy a little bit of development time for a Parekh, for a Soloviev, for a Kuznetsov, for a Brustevich, one of those players that maybe needs a little bit more time, and we don't know necessarily, like, in specifically with Soloviev and Kuznetsov where exactly they are, if they need additional time, if they just need the opportunity, time will bear that out. But I don't hate the idea of acquiring a player. Now, if we're only talking, I would need specifically they expire at the end of next season. I don't want to take somebody that's got 2+ years after
which
this
is
season.
Fair. Yep.
But I could see that scenario where you're bringing in that player, helps solidify your top four, helps Mackenzie Weegar with a dependable partner, and buys you a little bit more runway for development time. If you feel as an organization you don't have a guy that's ready to step up into that top four role, I'm all for it.
Well, I mean, who can we count on being here next year? And that'll lead me to my final question. When Todd, some of the other names that I had on here, Zach Jones with the Rangers is 24, and it sounds like that is heading towards a divorce. Brian Dumoulin in Anaheim is another name that I've got on here as a potential name that we could look at. But and I'll get to the final question in just a second. But next year, Kevin Ball, let's assume Rasmus Anderson, just for the sake of this conversation, okay. Not trying to trigger anybody, but let's assume Kevin Ball, Rasmus Anderson, Mackenzie Weegar are here for next year, as we should. Jake Bean, there's a fourth, Braden Pahal, there's a fifth. So you're looking to fill out 7 to 8 D. Now you're looking for that next, like you're looking for another left shot guy, because I don't think, as good as Hanley's been this year, I think there's a decent chance Hanley's not back next year. Barry won't be back next year. I don't feel comfortable saying Miramanov's part of this conversation right. for next year either. So, you know, now you've got some interesting, you got two or three potential names that you could slot in there. Is it better to just roll with what you've got internally for the rest of this season, maybe into next year? And that would, of course, be Solovyov, who will play a fourth straight game on Thursday against Tampa Bay, Kuznetsov, and maybe be looking at those type of guys internally as your solutions and additions, as opposed to looking externally.
This is somewhat of a cop-out answer. I apologize in advance. I wish the Flames would have been in a position earlier this season to give Solovyov a run, to give Kuznetsov a run, so you can better evaluate where they are in their development path and if and when their NHL futures arrive. It's one thing to evaluate them at an AHL level against AHL competition, but until you do it in the NHL, as we always say, you don't know till you know. We don't necessarily know yet. Solovyov, in his first three games in this run, really liked what I've seen. But is he still riding the high of a call-up? Is this who he is? Or is he just on a hot streak? Is he on a roller coaster and right now he's ramping up? He's going to hit that plateau and then he's going to go down. We won't know until he plays more games.
Yep.
Same thing with Kuznetsov. But knowing you have those two guys, I might just stick internally and one of them's my six and one of them's in the AHL. And if the one in the NHL isn't surviving as a number six, flip them around. I don't want a case where you have a 6-7. Well, maybe that's not even true. If you're able to split their games pretty evenly, almost platoon them, then they're not sitting. They're getting NHL practices. They're getting NHL games, not necessarily full-timers. In talking this out and hearing it, I'd be okay with keeping to what you have internally and letting them compete amongst themselves. And you can even group in Jake Bean in that. Braden Pahal has basically been a mainstay, so I think he's pretty secure in his role, his responsibilities, and him being a game-in, game-out kind of guy. I'm okay creating a little bit of a mini competition between young defensemen trying to carve their path.
I'm just looking at some other potential things that you could do, maybe helping some teams that are that would be a little closer to the cap. And again, could you help Tampa Bay free up some space and, you know, maybe they've got another deal on the table and take a McDonough and clear off 6.75 on their cap? Or could you, you know, some of the teams that are a little bit more strapped on the cap, is there a player you could take from Vegas to help them go and make a big splash? Is there a player you could take from Florida to help them go make a big splash? There's also those ideas too. So that's just, again, scratching the surface in a lot of ways on some of the things the Flames could do in terms of trying to go get another defenseman. What do we got here at 960? 960. Dean says, think you guys might be missing the boat. The Sabres will want established, proven veterans that'll make their team instantly better. As you say, they're desperate. And maybe in that respect, that is something that they would be interested in doing. Maybe a more veteran type guy would be of interest to them. What else we got here at 960, 960? What has Byram done that he's a proven commodity? No active players under 26 should be traded. Well, I think he's done lots. He's been one of their best defensemen this year. He's been a great partner for Rasmus Dahlin. Bowen Byram's a hell of a player. I don't think that that is... Are we debating that Byram's not a good player?
I mean, just played 25-50 2 days ago. Like, very clear usage north of 21, 22 minutes a night. Like, those are top pairing type of...
He's been playing with Dahlin all year. Yeah. Don't trade for D. The Flames seem to be good at developing defense, but suffer so much when it comes to forward and scoring. Fair enough. And that's why maybe that these types of deals, making a big splash, doesn't make as much sense. It definitely made sense when going and making that deal with Philadelphia. I'm actually of the opinion that, and just to wrap up the segment, I think if I had my druthers and I was making the call, I probably wouldn't be acquiring another D. I would probably be going with what I've got in the room internally right now. I don't think, especially Solovyov's played pretty well. You've moved Barry to the American League, so there's not as much of a weird logjam of guys not playing. Maybe they do the same with Miramanov at some point. But right now, I think you're in fine shape, and this year isn't the be-all and end-all. So if they were to go Solovyov and have him up the rest of the year, I'm okay with that. I really am, and you can make some of these larger type of decisions in the offseason. And if the prices are too high, I don't think you need to be desperate at all. Like, if you're just like, no, this is not conducive to where we are, then I think Craig Conroy can sleep fine at night without making a deal.
This is the worst analogy ever, but you're not going to the grocery store to fill out your shopping list here. This isn't a necessity buy for the Calgary Flames. You're going to get a nice brownish beige sweater to wear on a lovely 12-degree spring day.
You're talking about my sweater?
I am.
You like it?
I don't mind it. Wanted to give it a little plug.
I like it. Thank you.
It's a luxury item, not a must-have.
Well said. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Now the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. And now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Thursday Roundtable. Since the break, Flames have played two games, won them both. And in both those games, big goals from the fourth line. On Sunday, it was Kevin Rooney's goal that gave the Flames their first lead against San Jose. And on Tuesday in Washington, it was Martin Pospisil that broke a scoreless tie just past the midway mark of the first period. So two straight games with fourth line goals after weeks and weeks and weeks of the fourth line being a bit of a liability for this Flames team. But the last two games, it's been really good. What's been the biggest key in making this fourth line be that much more effective over the last six periods?
Well, I think the addition of Martin Pospisil has been huge. And truth be told, I didn't know how he was going to handle it. I mean, he's a guy who has spent a good chunk of the season playing on the first line with Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau. So to slide down the lineup and wind up on the right side of the fourth line with Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg, I'm sure was, you know, in some way a tough thing to wrap his head around. But Martin Pospisil, to his credit, has kind of found his game again. I know he's not playing as much as he was when he was a top nine guy, but all three guys on that line played more than 10 minutes, and Pospisil is just over 12 against the Capitals a couple of nights ago. But, you know, all three players on that line have been playing in straight lines. They've been playing north-south. They've been getting in there on the forecheck. And the biggest thing for me, they have spent way less time defending. That fourth line for 2 or 3 months seemed to always be on their heels and always stuck in the defensive zone and on the ice for a lot of chances and goals against. And now all of a sudden they're playing on their toes, spending way more time in the offensive zone. And between the three of them, They've got 5 points in two games coming out of the Four Nations break. So I think Martin Pospisil has helped give that fourth line an identity again. But I also think that Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg are playing their best hockey in quite some time.
No pressure, Ryan Lomberg, but he's got to score against Tampa now, doesn't he? Keep the run alive. Each guy would have a single goal each. True. Like, it's bet your anytime Ryan Lomberg goal. Let's go. For me, the fourth line looks a lot speedier. And to your point, Wilsey, you can credit a lot of that to Martin Pospisil and his foot speed. And how that's translating is the line as a whole are getting in on the forecheck, I find, a lot quicker. They're able to disrupt a lot more. They're able to ensure that the defenders on the other side aren't getting clean looks and clean breakouts. And to your point, Will Zebo spending more time in the offensive zone, when you're able to get in on the forecheck and disrupt like that, a lot of those passes in that transition game from the other side evaporates. I think throughout most of this season, we've seen the fourth line try to execute and try to play to an identity like we're seeing right now, but just haven't been able to. And that's why they've been defending more often than not. But when you're able to get in on that forecheck and active sticks and finishing checks the way that Martin Pospisil and Ryan Lomberg do specifically, it makes life a lot harder for the opposition in that transition game. And as a result, you're on your toes more. You're not playing on your heels, and you are spending more time in that offensive zone.
Yeah, I mean, there's been really the one change has been Pospisil getting in there. And Wilsey, you know, when you talk about not knowing what to expect from Pospisil coming into the lineup, I mean, I think a lot of credit goes to him in that he kind of embraced the role. And I think the message was, hey, we need you to go out and in this role, throw your body around, be a pain in other teams' asses, and be a really hard player, frustrating player to play against. And I think at times this year, and let's not mince words when we say, I think when we take a look at this year, which is now almost three quarters of the way done, compare it to last year, I would say this year is far more underwhelming as a whole for Pospisil than it was last year. I don't know. It would be hard for, I think, anybody to disagree with that. I don't think that's really all that much of a hot take. So this is kind of, hey, maybe the top nine isn't where you're going to be for now, but we need you to go and be an effective player. And instead of 13 minutes a night, maybe it's 8 minutes a night, but go out there, throw your body around, finish your checks, be hard on the forecheck, play with some speed and pace. And so far, I think he's really embraced that. And Wilsey, I'm with you. I wasn't 100% sure he was going to, because you're right. I mean, this year he started on a line where you could have pointed to him as, you know, a first line center. Now, obviously, that wasn't the case, but he was playing center with Huberdeau, and you were saying to yourself, okay, let's see how it works with Pospisil at center. That experiment didn't work, and he has been on different top nine lines prior to the Philadelphia trade, and there was the Zary injury too, so he stayed in the top nine. But now that this forward group is the healthiest it's been in weeks and the trade has happened, yeah, he's the easy odd man out of the top nine, and instead of being frustrated by that, he's gone and embraced the role that he's playing on the fourth line. So that is, I think, the easy answer. Lomberg's been generally consistent in what he does all year long, and Rooney is what he is. And so you add a guy like Pospisil, who can add a little bit more offensive high end on that fourth line and who can play with the most pace on that line, I think it just kind of drags the line a little bit further along. So it's an easy answer. We're all on the same page with it. But yeah, I think that he's been the biggest key.
And maybe our expectations for Martin Pospisil were too high to start
honestly.
They were pretty low to start last season. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, him and Connor Zary came up from the Wranglers and both became impact players in different ways for the Flames. But, you know, I said at the end of last season and probably again at the start of this season that I thought Martin Pospisil was one of the most impactful rookies in the NHL last season. I know the goals and the points didn't tell that story, but his speed and his physicality and how quickly he developed a reputation around the league as a guy who's not a lot of fun to play against. I really thought that Martin Pospisil was setting himself up to have a really impressive and maybe even more impactful sophomore season. He got off to a great start, guys. 5 points in the first three games playing up the middle. He's got 15 points in 54 games since then. Now, with that said, he has still been physical. He's seventh in the NHL. He's got 199 hits this season, leads the team with that total. And, you know, any points you get from your fourth line are a bonus. But if I'm Martin Pospisil, you know, I'm hoping not to stay on the fourth line. Even though he's playing well in that role right now, you know, if I'm him, I'm thinking I want to earn a spot in the top nine again. And I do expect to see him on some penalty kills moving forward. We asked Ryan Huska about that when the team came back from the break. So we'll keep an eye out for that. But right now, the Flames are getting some really valuable minutes from the fourth line. They're chipping in offensively, which is a bonus. But they're also setting the table for the next line that comes onto the ice. And for me, that's really the role that the Flames need that group to play moving forward.
Just quickly on the physicality front, Willsey, to follow up your point, Pospisil has 8 hits in 2 games, so coming out of the Four Nations break while averaging 10 and a half minutes of ice time. That's 23 hits per 60 minutes is the rate that he's currently throwing his body around. Kevin Rooney, no slouch either. He's got 5 in that same span. Lomberg.
You know, it's funny, though.
Yeah.
He only had 1 against the Sharks. I thought he should have had more than that.
Yeah.
It looked like he was playing that kind of menace role again, but he had 7 against the Capitals, and that was big.
Yeah. Lomberg somehow only credited with 2. Not sure I follow that one, but that's where he's at, just to round out the line.
The dumbest stat in the NHL. Like, it really is. Not like the stat itself is fine, but like
the inconsistency.
Can we just track it consistently? Yeah. Like for like one week, could we track it consistently? Anyway, that's a conversation for a different time. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you. Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday. 1 goal now in 7 games for Joel Farabee since he was acquired. And I think it's 3 points in 7 games for Frost, but I think with the faceoff dot and the time on the number one power play unit, it's been a little bit easier to see the impact of Frost. But 1 goal, no assists in 7 games since joining the team for Joel Farabee. Now, by no means is this us getting on him or saying, what is it? What an absolute waste of it. No, that's not what we're trying to do at all. But I'm just curious as to our observations of Farabee through 7 games, and as it hasn't been an instant click offensively yet.
No, it hasn't. And a belated 25th birthday to Joel Farabee, who turned 25 on Tuesday and celebrated with that 3-1 win over the Capitals. But Pat, you're right. I mean, I thought he would have more of an impact. I really liked him in his first couple of games with the Flames. I thought he was snake bitten in those games, but hasn't been as noticeable since then. He hasn't been bad. He just hasn't been productive. You know, last year was a career year for him, 22 goals and 50 points in 82 games with the Flyers. This year, between the Flyers and the Flames, 9 goals and 20 points in 57 games. So his numbers have dropped pretty dramatically. He's goalless and pointless in his last 4 games. But unlike early in his tenure with the Flames, he just really hasn't been around it for me of late. You know, he hasn't been buzzing around his opponent's net, at least coming close to put the puck in or setting a team made up to do that. And, you know, he's played in some different lines. And at first, they actually split the former Flyers guys up in Frost and Farabee, but now they're playing on a line together with Yegor Sharangovich. And I still think that line is looking for some chemistry. Didn't mind them in the first couple of games coming out of the break. But, you know, I look at that line on paper, and I think that should certainly give the Flames another scoring line, a line that is consistently putting pressure on the opponent and getting rewarded for that certainly more often than they have since being put together. So I still think he's probably getting settled in on a new team and in a new city and, you know, trying to figure out who he's got chemistry with and maybe who he doesn't, and trying to build it with the guys that he maybe doesn't have instant chemistry with. But, you know, he's a talented player. So, yeah, I'd certainly like him to be more noticeable moving forward, and hopefully as he gets acclimated to a new team and gets more comfortable with the guys and they maybe find a combination that works, that's how he'll look.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that in the fact that he hasn't been egregious out on the ice. I find he's just been a little bit inconsistent in trying to be effective in making an impact. There'll be a shift or a couple shifts here or there where I'm like, ooh, look at who. Well, okay, that's Farabee. Okay, yeah, okay. And then there'd be shifts following it up where you don't notice him at all. So I think there's just a little bit of in-game inconsistency form right now. And let's not undersell the fact that we're not too far removed from a major life change for Farabee and Frost. And sometimes we just think that these guys should be robots and come in and execute X, Y, and Z just because they're hockey players and they're professionals and they get paid. I mean, his life got uprooted We've seen that with a number of players coming through Calgary recently. So I'm not ready to get on him yet. At the same time, we're not seeing significant signs of that 22 goal, 50 point season, but I'm going to give it more runway, more leash. And again, he's not actively hurting your team, and the Calgary Flames as a whole up front slot a whole lot better with the additions of Frost and Faramir.
And the other thing, like, I mean, I'm also not, that's what I said right off, that this is not a topic being brought up to rip on the guy or
disparage.
I think what you're talking about is fair. And I also think, having talked to a couple people about this, I also think more so than even Frost, I think the John Tortorella effect might take some time for Farabee to shake off. And I almost wonder, and I'm not even saying that like as tongue in cheek, like it was a really rough go from what I understand for Farabee in Philly prior to the trade. And not to say that it was easy for Frost either, but just I've talked to a few people out of market. I've talked to a few people with the Flames. I think that is an area that it might take a whole lot longer than you might think for just like to get the comfort level back and to be comfortable making mistakes again. And I do think that the John Tortorella after effects from this past or the prior part of this campaign with the Flyers, I think it's going to take some time. And I do think there's no doubt that Ryan Huska is a different type of coach than Tortorella and approaches things differently. But I think that it wouldn't be a shocker if, you know, maybe the rest of this season, it takes a little, is the time that it takes for Farabee to shake that off. You know, I'm almost at the point where I'm like, okay, let's give it a lot of time, because I do think there's some skill there. I do think he is a pretty competent rush player. I do think he's got the ability to finish. I like the way he forechecks. The tools are there. We've seen the tools on display have good seasons. I wonder if the entire shock of this season, and throw on top of that a trade that he wasn't expecting, I do think it has taken its toll on the player. And so, yeah, I'm willing to give it a lot of time, because I think there's a player there, and I just think it might take a little bit of time for the Flames to extract it.
Yeah, I know we're talking about Joel Farabee here, guys, but I would say the same about Morgan Frost 5-on-5. You know, I've noticed Frost more often in the power play than I have at even strength. I think he's been a nice addition to the Flames' first power play, and he really fits in with that group of four other guys. But 5-on-5, I would say that he's got more to give as well. And I do think that John Tortorella maybe crushed their confidence a little bit. It could take some time to get that back. But I think something that's important to point out here is that Craig Conroy got ahead of it, which I think can be good in a number of ways. And one of those ways is, the sooner you acquire a player or players in this case, the more time you give them to get acclimated and to help your team, in the Flames case, try to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs. So if you acquire them at or just before the trade deadline, not a lot of runway there. But the Flames acquired these guys, about a month ago now? So that's about a five-week head start on guys that get dealt right at the deadline. And I just think it puts you in a way better position to get used to a new city and used to a new team and start to feel comfortable both in the city and with the team. And when that happens, I think both of these guys will become even more productive. I do wonder about the lines, though, guys. I was actually wondering, I wasn't expecting, but I was wondering if the lines would look any different at today's morning skate. I didn't think they would, coming off a big win over the Capitals on Tuesday. But if this game against the Lightning doesn't go the Flames' way tonight, I do wonder if they maybe think about changing some lines in their middle six. I think you leave that top line together, but I'm not convinced that you leave the backline and Frost lines together long term if they can't get something going.
Yeah, yep. It'll be interesting to see, because I still think there's no doubt that the overall forward group is work in progress or still not completely set. And I still think that this coaching staff, I'm with you, Wilsey. I think this coaching staff is still determining what their ideal top nine is here as we move towards the as we move towards the fourth quarter of the season. Okay, Wilsey, have yourself a wonderful rest of your Thursday. We'll talk to you Friday after this game against the Lightning. One more Daily Flames roundtable for the month of February. We'll do it Friday. Thank you, sir.
All right, enjoy the game tonight, guys.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up on this hour of Flames Talk. Thanks to Shanrin Virgi and Cameron Hughes. How do we like that? No? Not so much?
No.
Shanrin and Cameron? No? Okay.
Can we give them a couple name? Like, what would, if we were to merge their
Shanrin
names,
would Shanrin? Be their couple name. Just like...
Can.
Can would be good.
Can.
Can would be good. Or Sham. Sham. I like Sham better.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I was about to give him the win. Patrick takes it the last second.
That takes me back to being called Sham Wow.
Sham Wow.
Nonstop.
What would we be?
I was actually going to ask you that same question.
Perrin?
Yeah, I don't like that though.
No, me neither.
At.
Artrick? Airtrick? No.
No. No, doesn't. You know what?
Vicksburg?
Let's just
ooh,
be.
Ooh, Vicksburg. I like that. Vicksburg.
Vicksburg?
Pittsburgh? That's an inside joke. Thanks to Shan. Thanks to Cam, our outstanding producers this hour. And this hour wraps up. That has been the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.